Hi, I'm Kathy Forstey, Music Director at Casey Cafe Radio. Today I have the pleasure of chatting with Florida singer-songwriter Elaine Mayen. Elaine has a doctorate in astronomy, and her music touches both the celestial world and the natural world. Elaine has recorded 3 CDs. Her newest, Reach for the Stars, builds on themes of life, love, and showcases her beautiful vocals, alternate guitar tunings, and captivating storytelling. Thanks, Elaine Mayen, for joining us today on Casey Cafe Radio.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
I noticed on Reach for the Stars that this CD to me seems to sum up your philosophy on life. It kind of reflects you as an astronomer and has themes of everyday life. Would you say this is your most personal album yet?
Oh my, they're all personal in that they come from my experience and my sentences of experience. But I would say that this probably more reflects my astronomical viewpoint than my other albums.
Did you focus then on purpose, or was it just something that happened naturally?
It came out of the selection of the songs in choosing a thematic idea to follow with an album. I like to have themes, and this one I would say is my most cohesive album in the sense we collected songs that really reflected this perspective and hung together as a group and a concept, more than just a collection of disparate songs. So that was my approach on this one, and I had enough songs that I could do that. But I left out some that I really love, but they'll probably be on my next album.
How did you get into astronomy?
It's interdisciplinary. I've always loved math, I've always loved science, chemistry, and I've always been fascinated by the stars. I never was an amateur astronomer, but I am very fascinated with theoretical aspects of it. And so I think that's what got me going, you know, because of the interdisciplinary nature of the field. And it's wide open. There's all kinds of things you can look into and study. So it's very exciting.
Were you like into it as a kid?
No. It came to me later in life, and after I had done quite a few things. I went to school later. I didn't go straight from high school to college. I had a number of different careers before I decided to go back to school, and so I worked full-time and went to junior college for a while, and that's, I think, when I really discovered my bent for science, and I had some good astronomy undergraduate astronomy classes at junior college, which piqued my interest more, and then I just started pursuing it.
I'm guessing your love for music came before your love for nature then.
I grew up in the woods, and so my love for nature is an inherent part of who I am. Music also is too. I grew up around music. My mom and her sisters all sang in glee together. There were 4 girls, and they all sang different parts. So I grew up hearing them singing songs at family gatherings, and my mom played piano, and I took piano lessons. So music was always a part of our life, you know, and when we traveled in the car, we didn't have a radio, we sang rap.
What songs were you singing?
Oh, goodness. Like Coral Bells, you know, the old rounds, and I can't even remember them. They're just songs that families and kids can sing, you know, bottom of the sea. We're not talking fancy stuff, just singing for fun. The rounds were a lot of fun because of the harmonies. I don't remember a lot of them.
So was your mom or your sisters pursue music in any professional way?
My mom's sisters are all gone now. Her sister Mildred, I think, was very much known as a fabulous singer. My mom actually has a gorgeous voice. You know, they sang in choirs and in glee club, but never professionally in the sense of, you know, pursuing a career in music. But I think singing was always something that my mom and her sisters loved.
So did they sing in church?
They sang in church, and they didn't always live in the same town, you know, when they got older. So I think they were in various choirs of their own. As they got older, they pursued their various interests.
So did you say you had brothers and sisters?
I have 2 brothers. They're both interested in music, though we don't really do anything together. When I was younger, I would do some sing-alongs with my older brother. There's a 5-year difference between us, so not really. You know, I mean, we talk about music when we get together, but we play or sing together.
Were the music that you grew up with, like those sing-alongs and things, do you think that those influence your music today?
I'm sure they did, in the sense that, you know, hearing harmony is something that wires your brain to hear it. I mean, I think that's something the more you hear it, the younger you hear it, the easier it comes and you listen for it. And certainly being around music, I'm sure, helped me to recognize melody, good melody, enjoy melody. But as far as like the way my music is now, probably most of that influence came from when I was a teenager, when I discovered Joni Mitchell, Neil Young, a lot of the songwriters, and the melodies that they wrote really intrigued me, as well as their lyrical content. And before that, you know, it was things like The Sound of Music, you know, Julie Andrews, The Sound of Music, and Mary Poppins. I mean, we had those records as kids, and Peter, Paul, and Mary, like my first album was a Peter, Paul, and Mary album. So those things, I'm sure, had a big influence because we didn't have many records, and so I listened to them a lot, and those were all about melody and harmony. So when I heard the singer-songwriters as a teenager, that just ignited my sense of, oh, you know, maybe I could write songs. And I just really enjoyed listening, especially Neil Young first, just because he's such a melody meister and he has just fantastic songwriting ability, a lot of variety, and he was just always exploring new themes, and I just really enjoyed his music. And then when I heard Joni Mitchell, it was very different, but again, strong on melody and poetic lyrics, just really made me interested and curious about things. I learned about things I didn't know about from listening to these songs. So I was only 16 when I first heard them. And so it was an education. And Carole King, another songwriter I listened to ad infinitum. So I was deeply influenced by their music after I had this structure, you know, that was instilled in my childhood.
Mm-hmm. The songs we grew up with as kids, you know, the ones that we kind of sing along with in our little music books as children, I mean, they have, the reason why they've endured is because they've got these strong melodies to them. You might not always remember the words, but you remember the melodies, and they just kind of get stuck in your head.
So. And I think they forge neural pathways, and they've actually shown that in stroke victims, for example, that going back to those early songs can help in rehabilitation of language from stroke. Those neural pathways get burned in early, and then things connect to them all down the line as you go on through your life. Mm-hmm. There's a firm basis on which things are connecting. But I may not think certain things have influenced me a lot, you know, on the surface, but I know that they have.
So, right. They're back there in your brain somewhere. Yeah. When you were a kid and you were listening to your Neil Young and Joni Mitchell and that, were your parents supportive of that music? Did they enjoy it as well? Were they like, oh, this is junk?
I had tape player. I think an 8-track tape player in my bedroom. Did I have a record? I might have had a record player because I had some albums too. So that was pretty much, I did that in my room. You know, my mom had her own music that she would sing. She always was singing when she was working around the house. She was always singing. They were songs from her past. I don't remember her really listening to the radio that much. And my dad was never that much of a music listener. He was an engineer, and he was busy most of the time and working when we were young. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't influenced by him musically.
You sound like you're an amalgamation of both your parents, though. You got both the scientific side and you got the the musical side.
So. A bit of both.
Yeah. So your mom played piano, and she taught you to play piano. Was piano your first instrument then?
It was. I took piano lessons for like a year and a half, and actually that was really pivotal for me. I was, I guess, 8 or 9, and a woman in our neighborhood, Betty Keg, was a composer, and she was a fantastic piano teacher, and she really encouraged me to compose. When I wouldn't do my lessons, and I'd come to my lesson, and she'd say, what have you been doing? She knew I'd been doing something, and I'd play for her what I made up, and these were just, you know, piano pieces, not songs. And she would encourage me to write them down and then play them in our recitals. And so I really credit her with giving me confidence for creative endeavors in music, to feel like that I could do it and that it was okay to do it and I could have fun doing it and I could expand on what I was doing. And also my uncle My dad's brother was a concert pianist, and he was really fond of me, and he encouraged me a lot, too. So those little places of encouragement have a lot of bearing on, I think, how artists develop. I mean, I think it's really important, these little touchstones in life where people give you permission and you find it within yourself where it's okay to do that. Because even though I wasn't writing songs for many years, I was always playing around musically in my head and on the piano. So I always felt comfortable doing that rather than being locked into reading music. And so many really well-trained musicians who are quite capable of composing are afraid to do it because they just haven't ever been given permission to do that. And they haven't given themselves permission to just make mistakes and explore and play in that sandbox, you right. know, worrying about being perfect or matching up to some preconceived notion, you know, just to do it for fun.
I think being a songwriter and being a musician are completely two different things. Musicians tend to look at the written music and interpret it and try to play it correctly the way it's written on the page and then maybe put their own expression into it. But a writer created from scratch, you know, it's like baking something from a recipe and creating your own recipe, you know, so two different kind of things, I think.
Yeah, but then I always go back and do that. I'm a musician as well, you know, so I always go back and do the musician thing, you know, so I write. It's combined process. There's mm-hmm. the process of writing music and lyrics and refining in that process of refining and performing it and technically executing it. That's the musician aspect of it, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm.
But it helped shape me as a songwriter, too. So they inform each other. Those processes inform each other.
Yeah, I think that's important, you know, that you have both of those two things because it makes you better both as a musician and it makes you better as a songwriter as well. You said you played piano for about a year and a half. So when did you pick up the guitar?
I asked for a guitar when I was 16, and I got a guitar. But I didn't have lessons or anything, and, you know, learning to play guitar is not so easy because your fingers, I actually really do have small hands, and it hurts your fingers, and my guitar had terrible action, and it had a bad neck, it didn't stay in tune, so I really didn't make much progress on guitar for a long time. I don't know, it was until I was like in my 20s that I just really got the bug. I just really wanted to learn, I really wanted to write some songs, I just was driving me. I had to do it. So I bought a guitar, which I used for many years. It was a closeout sale at a music store that was going out of business. And it was one of these deep-bodied Ovations that was on sale. And I got it. And that guitar, I travel with that one because that one can be on a plane. I don't have to worry about it getting beat up. It can take all kinds of abuse.
Yeah.
So, you know, once I got that guitar, it had a smaller neck. It was easier for me to play, and I had it adjusted for good action. So then I really started going to town. You know, it became my friend, and I played it all the time.
Well, how old were you then when you wrote your first song?
I don't know for sure. Maybe 20, 21.
And do you remember what the song was about?
Yeah, in fact, well, the first one, I'm not even sure what the first one is, because, you know, songwriting is a process of putting things together and discarding. So I probably discarded my first song, so I probably don't remember what that is. My second song is actually on my first album. It's called Silent Bay, and it's kind of a love song about feeling lonely and together. I still think it's actually a pretty decent song, but I wasn't performing at all. That came much later, so this was all just doing it myself.
So when you wrote that first song, was there like anybody you were trying to mimic that was influencing you as a writer at that point? Were you trying to be like Joni Mitchell, or you were just trying to be your own self?
I was just, you know, because I had been kind of writing music on the piano when I was younger, I already had a sense of my own voice. And so I never really, actually what I admire most about Joni Mitchell is that she was so authentically her, that you could tell who she was in a second. And her songs, I mean, you could tell they were hers in a second. She was authentically her, and that's what I admired about her. That's what I wanted to be authentically me. Mm-hmm. And I also admired that she was constantly pushing the boundaries of her own musicality, and that was a guide for me. It was like to always not get too comfortable, to keep moving forward with this creative process and going to these places where maybe you don't get positive feedback, where, you know what I mean? You're doing it for sake of the art. And I felt like she always was just like the consummate artist, and I still do. She's still, I think, one of the most amazing songwriters that ever lived. That's the kind of thing that inspired me. But as far as like, I just always had my own story to tell, I guess. Even though I didn't know what it was. It was just whatever happened to be flowing through me. So no, I didn't really ever aspire to be like anyone. And in fact, I never really learned a bunch of covers. That was not my thing.
That's good. I mean, I was the same way when I first started. I wasn't into learning covers and learning other people's songs. I was just into writing my own stuff. So on that, thinking about that, so what inspires you to write a song?
That's a mysterious thing. All I can say is I do the work. I sit down. I have different phases of work. Sometimes I spend time writing. Maybe I'll have a period where I just do a lot of writing, stream of consciousness, mostly in the mornings. And then if I'm funny, like just hiking or playing tennis or gardening, things will pop into my head. Ideas, and they latch themselves onto maybe a lyrical concept that I might have come up with, or I might just be in a phase where I'm just messing around with the tuning on the guitar, or just messing around on the guitar, just trying to find something that I haven't done before. I get tired of my toolkit, and I'm always trying to expand it, find some other sound that I haven't done before, some other change I haven't done, some other rhythm. When I'm messing around like that, often something just connects. There's just something sinks in, or some image dogs me and attaches itself to maybe some musical concept. So for me, it's kind of an organic thing. I can't really give you a recipe. Like some people write lyrics or some people write music. For me, it's an organic thing, and I can't tell you which comes first because it varies. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you that once it catches my attention, it makes me hold my attention on it. So I become obsessed until it's written. So there's some point, like you're messing around, you're messing around, you're messing around, and then there's some point where it just seizes you and you have no choice. You have to write this thing, and you know, you'll stay up late, you'll be obsessed for the days that it takes to write it. And some songs I can go through a few days after I get to that point and get it written. Other times it takes me years because it'll propel me up to a certain point, and then I'll just reach a plateau where I don't know where it's going, or I don't know where to take it. And sometimes I just think maybe I'm not there yet in terms of life, that sometimes I need a different perspective. And so that just goes on the back burner until it raises its head again. It says, oh, pay attention to me now. And then sometimes just like, oh, and then it comes right out. So it is rather mysterious, but I do say that you have to do the work. You have to put in the practice time, you have to put in the free write time, and also just the downtime where you just let it percolate. That's also really important too.
Yeah. So do you try to write every day, or you have like a certain amount you want to do every week as far as writing?
You know, I'm always doing music, so it's it's what I do. So either I'm practicing for a show and just trying to keep my repertoire up, because I have to keep all of this stuff in memories, and it's a lot of stuff. And maybe not everything is, maybe songs I'm not performing right now, but I can't allow myself to forget them. So I have to kind of go over back material to keep it there, and then go over the material that I'm gonna be performing. And then I try to do some playtime just for me, just to relax and enjoy, either exploring an old song, doing it a different way, or exploring some new idea that may have occurred to me. And I have long fallow periods where I'm not writing at all, but I'm always playing or doing something musical. So I'm always in process, and it's just whether it's the time to actually write the song, that is mysterious, but it presents itself, and then I don't have a choice. That's what I have to do.
Do you like to write outside? Since nature is such a big theme in your music, do you like to go outside and write?
Think of it like zen, you know? It's not like you're sitting on the pad all the time, or you're not sitting at the table writing. I'm always, this is what I'm telling you, I'm always there doing it. I'm always in process. So I can be hitting the tennis ball, and then all of a sudden I'm in the rhythm, and all of a sudden an idea comes to me. Oh, wow, I could explore this concept, or a series of words comes, and or I'll be working in the garden, or I'll be walking, or I'll be sitting at the desk writing. So it's anywhere, all the time. Anytime is a time for that stuff to come up. You know, the main thing that I do is I just try to keep my writing fluid. Free writes are good because it keeps you attentive to what's going on right now, to details. So outside writing details is good to remember how things look and feel and smell, but also inside and just going out and experiencing life, going on backpacking trips or going canoeing and taking in those images. That's all part of my process. You know, if there's an image or a feeling that I have during a real life experience, then I try to synthesize that. I try to get the details of it and to get the poetry of it and get that visceral feeling to nail that down in words or music and store it up. And so there's a lot of stuff that never shows up in songs, but it's all this process of like everything that I experience becomes fodder, right? Mm-hmm. So sometimes in the morning, dreams are another place, you know, because that's when you're really, when you're dreaming, you're processing all this stuff. And so when I get up in the morning, that's why I like to write in the morning. I still have dreamscapes that I can draw on because they're part of that process of ordering and sorting. And dreams are kind of creative in themselves. And so they sometimes become fodder for songs. Also, just the images that they present, I write down. And uh-huh. It gives me something to draw on. And I'll go back sometimes years later and just look at stuff, because you can't remember everything that you've written. And most of it's crap. But in there's like little seeds, little gems. It's like, oh, I can mine that, you know. And so I go back in my yellow marker and I find things that pique my curiosity or trigger other ideas and memories or go together with something maybe that I hadn't experienced then but I've experienced now, and let that be a seed around which other things coalesce. And I'll explore that for a while, and sometimes it leads to a song, and sometimes it just leads to like another little nucleus that sits out there in my pile of nuclei that I from time to time go in and pick one up and say, oh, what can I do with this? So it's kind of random.
Yeah. I know your newest CD, Reach of the Stars, are all those songs that you had written and you brought into the studio, or were they songs that you kind of worked on in the studio? How did those songs kind of work their way into the CD?
Oh my, let's see. I have to think about that because I recorded it took a couple of years to record this. This was a slow process. I rewrote a lot of songs after going into the studio. Just the more you play something, you learn about it and you find ways to do it better. And so there's nothing like recording and I actually did a lot of pre-production work, but there's nothing like recording to kind of bring into focus what's not working and go back to the table and rewrite. And that's an expensive way. And I thought I had done all that, but you know, I'm just like always reworking. That's how I work as an artist. I'm constantly rewriting. Nothing is ever truly fixed. It can always be improved or changed. And so, and I went back and forth on a few things. So I probably, you know, a couple of these songs maybe I wrote while I was in the recording process, but I didn't write them in the studio. It's just like over that period of time. Certainly some of these were written, but I can't tell you the order. I don't think in a real temporal sense, since you're asking me to do something that's really hard for me. Because these things, they're not linear the way that they're conceived or written. Their final forms, I never really reach their final forms until they're on the CD, because I'm still rewriting them even in the process, you know. And so I would say that certainly some of them, most of them, were they close to where they needed to be, but they all were altered somewhat by the process of recording. Mm-hmm. So that I went back and redid things, redid guitar parts, redid lyrics even, rewrote lyrics even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you had a lot of great musicians on this CD. How did you get the musicians to come in and play on it for you?
Well, Liz and Lon are in a band called Gatorbone, and Jason and Gabe have been playing with them for many, many years. And Gabe lives in St. Augustine, Jason lives in Orlando, so they don't play band doesn't play that often. They're all absolutely fantastic musicians, but I've known Gabe since he was a teenager, and he's just a fantastic musician. I like him. He gets my music, and so just arranged for them to come. And of course, he's just really good friends with Liz and Lon, and his kids play with their grandson. And so, you know, it's kind of like a big family. They're a little spread out, but you know, there's that family feel. And and Jason played on Rise, and he's just, again, just the quintessential musician with a great ear. He gets what I'm trying to do, and he listens. They're both really great listeners. Like, they'll proffer something up, and if it's not what I want, there's no ego involved. And that's why I like working with them, because it's ego-free. They give their all, and they work with me to help me get what I want, because it's sometimes hard to articulate. And plus, I don't play violin, for example, and so I need to hear, like, well, what can you do here? What can you bring to the table? And then, you know, once you hear what he's got, then you can ask, well, can you do this? Can you do that? So that's pretty fun. And then plus, I mean, they both just have great musicality. And so it's just always fun to work with them, because musically, they're up there in the stratosphere. And so they bring something really beautiful to what I'm trying to do. And it's not, they're not just playing. I mean, they're really working within what I want from them, but they're also contributing some really beautiful musical ideas of their own.
Yeah.
I value that.
Trust is a big part of working with other musicians, and it sounds like you have a really great trust with those musicians, and not only their ability, but your willingness to share with them and their willingness to share back with you.
Right. And it's not so easy to get, really. I mean, there's a lot of studio musicians that they're great musicians, but they're not as good at listening, because I have very specific ideas, and I think that they respect that and honor that, and that is something that I value, because it is my project after all. So,
right. And
I do have very strong opinions about what I want the music to do and where I want it to go. And so if it's not going where I want it, to have that egoless involvement for someone to be able to alter without feeling hurt feelings or anything, it's really important. It's just so important to just have that kind of interaction where it is this give and take and there's no hurt feelings. Everybody's like working for the same end.
Right, yeah. I want to talk about a couple of the tracks on the CD. One of my favorite songs is the inspirational song, Lean Into Love. Can you tell me where that song came from and what inspired the writing of that song?
Well, knowing, personally having experienced depression, and that's just part of the human condition, and knowing how hard it is when you're really blue to reach out, and also just, we lost a friend to suicide, and it's just hard. And, you know, people go, oh, why didn't you tell me? But that is when it's the hardest. When you need it the most, it's the hardest to ask for it. And so it's just this idea of just like leaning in the direction that love is there, and you can't always see it. But sometimes if you just lean in the direction, you can connect to it, and you'll get what you need for that time. Mm-hmm. So that's where it came from.
Is You Are Not Alone, is that another song in that vein?
I wrote that for my son because I wanted him to know, you know, because we are human and humans get depressed and humans feel dark nights of the soul. And I just wanted him to know if he ever gets to that point, he isn't alone. Lean towards love. We're always here. And that's, you know, just my affirmation to him.
That's great.
But that speaks to everyone, though. And I think it does. It gets quite a bit of radio play, so I guess it does speak to a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, speaking of radio play, another song of yours is getting a lot of play and a lot of requests on Casey Cafe Radio is Rolling Home. What do you think it is about that song that's speaking to people?
Well, I think it has a little bit of a blues flavor, just a touch of it. And it's a love song. Everyone loves a love song. I know what appeals to me in that song, and that it is expressing a mature love and a deep love, not just infatuation. It's like this, a continuity, and that's what appeals to me. And so I think just that kind of the bluesy sound, road song, people like a road song, I guess, but it's a love song and people love songs.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think.
Yeah, I it's true. I mean, that's why people keep writing songs about it, right?
Yeah.
I noticed that your last CD, Rise, came out, what, in 2013? Is that right?
That's correct.
And then you had like a 10-year break from the first, the CD before that, Seamless. What happened in those 10 years between those two albums?
My son was born. Let's see, I released Seamless at the end of October, I think. And then my son was born January 3rd. So that really altered. And I had only been performing a very short period of time. I mean, I didn't start performing until really after I had recorded the tracks of Seamless. And then I wanted to pursue this singer-songwriter thing. But then I got pregnant, which was a surprise, but a very welcome surprise at 39 years old. And then I had my son and I devoted my time to him. And I did continue to perform some, but when he started walking around and becoming quite mobile, it became less viable. And staying out late playing didn't make a whole lot of sense. And he had to get up early. Mm-hmm. And so I took a break from the performing thing. I didn't stop writing, though. I have to say he impacted my writing in a big way because he just didn't want me to play guitar or sing at all if I wasn't doing it to him. And when he was about, and again, I don't know what year this would be, I went to songwriting camp and I had an instructor kind of sense that I would, because I went to camp because I wasn't getting any time to write at all. Because of the demands of motherhood. And he took me aside and read something to me, which essentially was a woman writer, I think, in the early 1900s. She's saying that how you should demonstrate your art to your kids. And that to put it aside was not doing them any favors, that they really needed to see that you honored your art. And I took that to heart and I came home and I said, okay, 15 minutes, my door is shut. My husband and my son, they have to answer the phone. They can't ask me any questions. They have to handle whatever happens. They have to handle it for 15 minutes. So literally, I would just give myself 15 minutes to do something musical. And then they had to be trained to honor that too, because I wasn't honoring it, you know? And so as soon as I did that, I learned how to be very focused and how to, rather than going over an entire song, or I would just pick problem areas, or I would focus, hyper-focus on specific things that I could work on in 5 minutes, 10 minutes, so that I could actually get something done. So it taught me to be efficient, which was really good. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot of time just to like play in the sandbox. I had to, here's your 15 minutes, you got to make the most of it. So I think that that was a real learning experience for me, is to recognize where I waste time creatively. What is creative play and what is creative headbanging?
yeah.
And in practice, there was a lot of wasted time because in learning new things, like trying to do things too long, just to get it down to a couple of minutes to really get it in right, and then walk away from it and let the brain store it. So just like learning about how the brain works and really focusing when I had time on specific things, and then being able to walk away from it and know that I actually accomplished something. So that was really a great thing for me. And I passed other artists who had children. It's been good for them too.
Yeah. I totally relate to everything you just said. I've had that same experience with my own son and trying to find time to write and play, and so I've been there. You mentioned that you started performing later in life a little bit. So what point did you start going out and playing your music for other people?
Pretty much around the time I was near completing the recording of the tracks for Seamless. That was released in 95, so it was that late in the game. So then I started doing all of that, and you know, that was back when flyers, you literally did cut and paste. And I would mail out, I had a mailing list, and I would mail out postcards, you know, stamps on, very different. And then after he was, I went through a period where I did some stuff with a friend of mine. She sang harmony with me, and we did some of that for a while, but then she had her son, and that occupied her time. And then after my son was born, I did a duo with a guy for a while where we did covers, but to be honest, I just didn't enjoy that. I didn't enjoy playing in bars. I didn't enjoy the late nights. And you know, I just really, even though I just didn't really want to do covers. That's not what I don't consider myself a vocalist, like a cover vocalist. That's not who I am. I never was comfortable with that. So then I went back to doing the solo thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm comfortable with. You know, I mean, other people are way comfortable with doing covers and more power to them. That's just not where my zone is.
Yeah. So what kind of venues do you usually play in then?
I'm actually very selective now because I've done everything in the past, you know, and I've come to the conclusion that if it's not feeding my soul, there's no point in doing it. I'm past the point of doing stuff for quote unquote exposure. So I prefer house concerts, intimate settings, listening venues. I spend a lot of time on lyrics. Lyrics are a large part of my songs, and I want them to be heard. I mean, I want to communicate, and that's not going to happen in a background setting. And
right.
So my songs take a bit of attention, so I have to provide that space for that to be the case. And mm-hmm. So there's not a ton of opportunities out there for that, but I'm doing the best I can.
So are you touring for Reach for the Stars then and doing some house concerts?
I'm doing a little stuff around Florida, and I'm doing something in December up in North Carolina, but I haven't booked a big tour or anything like that, no. No, I'd like to get out more. There's some certain constraints here. So, you know, again, I'm doing the best I can with mm-hmm. the situation I have. So I play when I get the opportunity, and I go to conferences and try to play there.
Mm-hmm. Are you still working, too, as a professor?
No. I mean, I left academia a long, long time ago. I've been doing music. Essentially, I worked all my life since I was 14, and then my husband had a job here running a bookstore, independent bookstore. He loved it, and when I got to the end of my postdoc, I was faced with getting postdocs elsewhere, which would involve moving him from a job that he loved, and also he had elderly parents, and he was an only child, and he wanted to be near them in their last years. So we made a family decision to stay in Gainesville, which was academic suicide for me. And so I said, okay, well, if we're going to do that, then, then I got pregnant. So I was a stay-at-home mom while he worked. And he worked a lot. And so essentially at the retail, he worked holidays and everything.
Right.
So I was pretty much full-time mom, which I love, and which is a job, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
And I think a lot of women choose to go back to work. They go, oh, well, I have to work. And it's like, I know this. They chose to go back. And we just don't need a lot to live on. We live very simply. We don't have TV. We don't have to pay for cable, stuff like that, you know. Uh-huh. So, and I raised him. And then when my husband's bookstore closed, and he retired, I said, well, I want to try to do this now. I want to try to focus on music, recording, and performing. So it's been harder getting gigs. It's not really my strong point, getting gigs. I'm still working on that. But I continue to write and record and and hope, you know, that some doors will open up.
Yeah. Self-promotion is the hardest thing to do, I think. You know, let me sit down and write songs all day, I can do that. But to promote myself, it's just the most difficult thing in the world. So
I work at it, but I'm probably not the best at it. And my heart is in the music, but I also know there's the other aspects that you have to do. I think when you're doing it, you're all by yourself and you don't have anyone helping you do any of this stuff. It's really hard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it's a certain amount of self-obsession, which is, I'm not comfortable with that level of self-obsession in that I have a family, I have a son in college, I have elderly parents, you know, we have pets. I don't know, we got a lot going on and other people in my life I need to spend time with. So I can only do so much and I try to strike a balance.
Is your son, is he into music as well?
Oh my goodness, yes. Yeah. It's in a band called Xenogenesis. It's a trio, bass, drums, and he's a lead guitarist and lead singer and the songwriter. And I think they had a great gig the other night we went. It's so much fun going to hear him play. And, you know, they've had maybe 6 or 7 gigs now, so they're still new at this, but they're really quite good. And he's really, I think, a fabulous writer and just a I think he learned the work ethic from me, and he honors his muse. He is in biochem in college, but he is deeply a musician. There's no question about it. And I've always encouraged him in that. And also, he's very practical and he sees how little money I make and how important it is to have other ways to doing this thing that you have no choice but to do. And I kind of feel that, like me, he recognizes that aspect of himself, that this is who he is. I'm really proud of him and I'm excited to see where he's going to go with it and what he's going to do. And it's just when he goes on vacation with us, he takes time away from school to write and he spends most of his time working on music. So it's really a nice legacy to pass down that honoring your muse and enjoying the process of that kind of work.
So taking those 15 minutes every day was paid off for him too. So are there any projects you're working on right now?
Well, I'm still working on Reach for the Stars. I'm still trying to figure out how to get it out there. And Earth Day is coming up, so I'm hoping when my mother sings, we'll get some airplay then, a song I wrote with Penny Nichols and Lisa Ashman. So I'm working on that, and I'm preparing for some gigs, and I'm kind of in the process of trying to find like new tools for my box. I'm looking for new ideas, and I'm playing with a little bit of, you know, free writes and some ideas about where I might want to go. I'm not sure folk music is really where my music belongs. I'm discovering some aspects about my music that I didn't really recognize, in that people that buy my music often give it to friends that are sick or have post-surgical or dealing with cancer. So I'm finding that there's a certain healing aspect to it and hope. And also, I like the aspect of it that presents nature in the way that I think that we should receive it, and that we're part of the biosphere. We're not separate from it. And kind of help integrate that concept into people's lives. And it's just a softer speaking kind of thing. It's not a preaching to the choir. You may have an audience out there I'm not reaching at all, and I've got to figure out how to do that. It is speaking to people on this level, and so I'm searching for where to put it for that.
I think you'll find your audience. There's definitely a bigger audience out there for you, and I think you'll find them. I got one more question for you, and this is a question that a lot of people hate me for asking this, but it's my James Lipton type question. What is your favorite song by someone else, and why?
Oh my goodness. I don't hate you for asking it. I don't have any specific favorite songs. I love so many songs and so many instrumentals. It just depends on what day it is, how I'm feeling. You know, if I'm feeling a certain way, a song pops into my head, you know. I try to have lots of songs in my brain that can pop up at any time. So, I mean, sometimes my favorite song is the song that I'm writing at that minute. And sometimes it's some old song, you know, that I hear my husband playing, and he listens to a lot of jazz, and sometimes it's listening to Ella Fitzgerald or Sarah Vaughan, and I say, oh, that's my favorite song today. So I can't really say there's a single favorite song, because that would change on a moment by moment basis.
Well, that's a good answer. I like that answer. So I want to tell everybody, we've been talking to Elaine May, and she has a new CD out called Reach for the Stars. You can go to Elaine's website at www.elainemahanmusic.com, and it's spelled M-A-H-O-N, Mahan Music. And she's had 3 CDs out. The newest is Reach for the Stars. Be sure to check her out on her website and on KC Cafe Radio. You can also purchase her music on the website, correct?
Yes, you can. And also on Bandcamp. But for the full albums, my website, and for the individual songs, Bandcamp and iTunes.
Okay. And also, I think you're on CD Baby as well.
That's right.
So you can go to CD Baby as well to purchase the album as well. So the whole album is great. So I recommend you not just download one song. I recommend you go get the whole album, because it's an inspiring and uplifting CD, and that I think you'll enjoy it. So thank you, Elaine, so much for taking the time and talking with us.
It's been a pleasure.